Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach.
My father was my idol. He was my best friend. My dad was coaching at Ashland College, and then he went to the University of Minnesota. So I was going on Big Ten road trips with him.
The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and IMG, and is brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now your host, Coach Dave Odom.
Welcome to a new season of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the Nevada Wolfpack, Eric Musselman. Welcome to the podcast, Coach.
Thanks so much for having me on, Coach Odom. Really appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome. Listen, you're doing us a favor. You know, it's hard for us to get West Coast coaches up this early. So many of them, you know, are doing things, and, you know, by the time they get in, they're ready to go to practice, and it's just hard to get our 30 minutes in with you guys out that way. So you doing this is really special to us. And, you know, I was looking through your resume, and, boy, you've got an expansive resume, really. You've been a lot of places. And I think that's a tribute to you. A lot of coaches are so protective about where they go and what they do. You've basically said to people, if you got a job opening, I'm interested. And you've been a lot of good places. You graduated San Diego. You played some really good basketball there. You've been an assistant in the NBA with the Timberwolves, head coach at Rapid City. You've been assistant with the Magic and the Hawks, head coach with the Warriors. I mean, what's it like doing all of those? I mean, you spent a good amount of time at each one. You were successful at each one, but there was always another opportunity for you.
I think, you know, first of all, Coach, you know, when you love to coach, you know, you're willing to kind of go anywhere. You know, early on in my career, I got an opportunity at the age of 23 years old to be a head coach in the minor leagues. And then that parlayed into working for some incredible coaches, being an assistant coach in Orlando for Chuck Daly and being an assistant coach in Orlando with Doc Rivers and then working for Mike Fratello in Memphis. And so you're surrounded by all these great coaches that you can learn from. And, you know, I think the biggest thing as I look back and hear you talk about some of the places I've been is at an early age, kind of climbed the coaching ladder really quickly, was at jobs virtually 2 years, and then I kind of got a new, better position. So I started off behind the bench with the Orlando Magic and then ended up moving up to one of the third seats on the bench. And then from third seat went to Atlanta, you know, as the lead assistant. And so all these things kind of happened quickly. And then I got a head job at a very young age, coaching the Golden State Warriors. And at that point, the first time you get fired, things change and your perspective changes and you have to learn to bounce back. So I look back at all my experiences and feel so fortunate to have had great jobs, worked with great people, and then had the ability to not only bounce back, but kind of also, I think anytime you hit a tough streak, meaning you get let go. When I got let go from the Kings, I needed some time away to reconnect with my two sons. And after 3 years, decided, hey, I want to get back into coaching. And it was time to kind of try to reinvent my career.
You know, one of the things that I didn't mention when I was reading out that resume of yours was, you know, you had some really good international experience where you coached actually some of our national teams. You won some gold medals with them, but you also coached maybe some pro teams overseas. What was that like?
Well, Coach, it was awesome. You know, what I ended up doing was I was coaching in the D League or a minor league, and then the season would end, and you have like a 5 month gap, and so I wanted to continue to coach, and so what I did is I coached the Dominican Republic national team, and then I also coached the Venezuelan national team, and it really made me become a better coach. Number one, The facilities that we had were hard facilities. It was not an easy life. And then half my roster, both with Dominican Republic and Venezuela, did not speak English, and so it made me demonstrate better. It made me slow my voice down in huddles, in game, especially late game. I had to slowly deliver messages. I had to write on the board more concise and clear instead of scribbling, and it made me a way, way better coach. And I love doing that. And even at a really, really young age, Coach, what I did when I was with the West Palm team in the old Continental Basketball Association, as soon as that season would end, I would go coach in another pro league, the USBL, which is a summer league. So I was getting 50 games in the minor leagues and then another 30 games coaching in the USBL. And I kind of kept that same formula once I was coaching in the D League and wanted to go coach these international teams.
Well, coaching all these pro teams and the international teams, in the back of your mind, did you always have as an option, maybe I want to coach at the NCAA level in college basketball?
I think so for sure, Coach. And the reason I say that is, you know, my father was my idol. He was my best friend. And so when I was growing up, early elementary school, my dad was coaching at Ashland College. And so I would go to all those games. And then he went to the University of Minnesota when I was in fifth, sixth grade. And so I was going on Big Ten road trips with him. And so for me, that was, something that I always thought that my dad loved to do. And then later he coached at South Alabama and took them to an NCAA tournament. So our paths, meaning my father and mine, if you look at him, it's eerie similar as far as minor league experience, NBA experience. My dad coached two NBA teams. I coached two NBA teams. We both have extensive backgrounds in the minor leagues. And I later in life kind of did what he did early in life, which was the NCAA and coaching college basketball. And I feel really fortunate that the NBA stuff I did early. So I'm not looking beyond my job. I love where I'm at. The travel in the NBA is really difficult. I love having an impact on student athletes. So yes, for sure, the college was always something I wanted. I did think that it would be easier to get a college job than what it was. I went to Arizona State for 2 years under Coach Sendek and tried to learn the college game. And really, I was naive. I felt like with the NBA background and being an assistant coach for 2 years that I would have an opportunity to get a head job in college. It never happened. And then it was kind of a turning point, Coach Odom, because Flip Saunders, who was the head coach and part owner and ran the front office for the Timberwolves and had played for my father, he offered me a job to join him as assistant coach. And Johnny Jones, who I had never met before, had offered me a job at LSU. And so I had to make a decision. Our family sat down. And we did decide that the best thing for us and as a family would be to let's go take a leap of faith to LSU and continue to learn the college world and continue to make recruiting contacts and so forth. But that was a real turning point because to go back to Minnesota would have been easy with Flip Saunders. It would have been safe. He was someone that I had known my entire life. And it was back to an organization that I had worked as an assistant coach and my dad was the first coach of the Timberwolves. So I knew when I went to LSU, again, working for someone that I had never met before and passed up an opportunity to go back to the Timberwolves, I knew that as a family, this is exactly where my career was going to go, basically until probably I retire.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned your father. I am a self-professed Celtic fan, and I remember watching your dad in all those games when he had some of the great players for the Celtics and some of the great games and the great playoffs. Your dad was a great coach. I didn't know him as a person, but everybody, from all reports, he was a great man as well. And it's obviously you've got a real good relationship and great memories of being with your father. And, of course, I've got a son myself, Ryan. I've got two sons, Lane and Ryan. Ryan's coaching. Lane is scouting for the Utah Jazz. So, you know, having two sons in basketball and watching them kind of find their way, it's been really, really interesting. And you know, hearing your stories about your, you know, as you grew up in the profession, it reminded me of my two. So congratulations to you. Let's talk about your time at Nevada. Nevada as a basketball school has been up and down. Mark Fox, when he was there, they had him going pretty good, and then there was a little bit of a drop-off. And you're back now. Your record right now is 81-29 after 3 years. I guess it's 3 years, isn't it? And
yeah. This will be going into year four, Coach.
Year four, 81-29. That's a really good record. But the thing that right now that everybody's so excited about in the Mountain West Conference is that, you know, you've been regular season champions. You've got a good number of your players back. You're coming off a year in which you were the West Coast Coach of the Year out there. Tell us about your team, your present team, what you're hoping to see them achieve and how you're going to go about it. Tell us a little bit about your team and your players.
Well, we're trying to get better every day. Obviously, there's been a lot of hype. You know, coming off of a Sweet 16 generates hype, but then when you have three players put their name in for the NBA draft, and we had that with Jordan Caroline, Cody Martin, and Caleb Martin, it becomes, you know, a situation where the guys looked at the NBA, thought about it, at the last moment decided to come back, and then we were able to add surrounding pieces to our team. We lacked depth last year, and we lacked size, and we were able to address those two issues with a grad transfer from Old Dominion and Trey Porter. And then we had four sit-out guys last year that were all transfers that had really solid numbers at their prior colleges. And then we added a five-star, which is the first time that we've had a five-star on campus. And so for us, there's a lot of excitement. We've sold out of our season ticket base. And so it's going to be really interesting how we respond, because we do have pressure. We do have a target, so to speak, on our back. We have talked to our team endlessly about how we are going to be big games on other people's schedule. And, you know, with the hype and everything, we continually talk about how there's not only just expectations, but you have a burden of proof, so to speak, where you've got to go out every single night and play your A game. And we can ill afford to come out and think that we can play lackadaisical for 5 or 6 minutes in a 40-minute game and come away with a win. That is not going to happen. We're not going to sneak up on anybody. And so we have responsibility. We have responsibility to each other to bring it with our preparation. And then, like I said, you can't hide when you're a ranked team, and we're coming into the season as a ranked team. And it'll be really interesting how we're able to respond.
Now, you know, one of the clips that I've enjoyed watching about you is you're dancing in the locker room. I didn't know you had that much rhythm.
Well, Coach, the way we try to do things is we really, really try to go hard in practice. We try to get as most out of our players as we possibly can. And as you know, it can be a grind, but along those same lines, if you can't enjoy it and have fun, you know, it's not worth it. So we love to have fun. We celebrate our wins behind closed doors. Sometimes those closed doors have cameras, obviously, when you're in the tournament. But we love it. Our guys like to celebrate victories, and so we do that. You know, I probably still need to work on my dance moves a little bit more. If you talk to my wife, I've got a long way to go.
You had the Caleb twins out there. They were at North Carolina State, and a lot of people in the state of North Carolina saw them grow up here and really right in the throes of Winston-Salem. And they were really good players. They went to North Carolina State. There was a coaching change there. How were you able to get them out west?
Well, it was a recruiting thing where we almost didn't, even get them on campus. They had gone to a couple other places and really liked them. And, our thing is just come out, check us out. And what we did, Coach Odom, is we actually recruited Cody Martin a lot heavier than Caleb Martin. And the way that their recruiting had gone when they came out of high school and then during this transfer recruitment was everybody had gone after Caleb a lot harder than Cody. And I said, hey, what can make us different? And I had gotten word that Caleb wanted to make sure that his brother had a prominent role wherever he went and that it wasn't just more highly acclaimed Caleb that was getting the attention. And then their mom kind of felt the same way. And so I think that when we sold our vision on how those two could impact us, I think it really intrigued them that we were trying to do something that hadn't been done in Nevada in a long time. And then also the fact that both of them, not just one of them, was going to have such a huge role.
While we're talking about recruiting, the trends now are different when I was coaching. I mean, I look at it now and I say, I don't know how the coaches do it. I'm amazed at it. One of the trends is this one and done deal. I look at your roster and your roster is not full of one and dones. You've got a roster full of players who have come in early, at one level. You and your coaches have worked hard with them. And they are not the same player today that they were when you brought them in. They're much better. Is that something that you have consciously tried to develop? Is that something that you want your program to be known for? That is developing players and getting them ready, not only to win basketball games at Nevada, but also possibly to be ready to play at the next level.
I think so, Coach. I mean, we, great learning experience for me was a few years ago. I was working for the Los Angeles Lakers D League team, the LA Defenders, and I got called into Mitch Kupchak's office. And Mitch was the general manager of the Lakers at the time, and he said, "Hey, Coach, we are really only focused on one thing. Yes, everybody in the building likes to win games. But the bottom line is, how can you develop guys on a daily basis?" And so our whole focus turned into, instead of worrying about offensive plays, it was, how do we work on guys' ball handling? How do we work on their shooting? How do we work on fundamentals such as jump stops? And ironically, that year, we ended up breaking all D-League records, both offensively and defensively, and in win totals. And I attribute that to the fact that, yeah, we made our guys better players, which then correlated. Their individual skill was enhanced, and then that helped our winning. And, it's so interesting that you watch a youth team, a fifth or sixth grade team, and you see a coach putting in a press break for 35, 40 minutes, And I often sit and say to myself, why didn't they just work on two-ball dribble for those 40 minutes? Because they'd break the press better if they could dribble rather than what was scribbled down on a notebook, and then you're trying to get guys to dry run and skeleton it. So, yes, we believe that above all else, you've got to make your guys better. And I would feel that way that whether the whole team was filled with five stars or whether you had guys that were two stars, you got to make guys better. And when guys feel like you have their best interest to get better as an individual player, I think there's a lot more buy-in.
As you develop individual players, help them get to be the best they can be, you're molding a style of play that you hope is going to be successful in your league and nationally. What is the difference in the style of play that you're trying to put in at Nevada versus the typical style of play that our listeners can witness every night if they turn on their TVs and they watch the NBA play? I mean, what's the difference in, you know, a collegiate style of play at Nevada versus the NBA? Or is there any difference? I know the players are different, but how about the style?
I mean, I definitely think that there's different style. You know, I think that there's, you know, collegiate teams that play similar to NBA teams. And then there's, you know, there's NBA teams that have a collegiate style with how they do things. But, I mean, they're completely different games just because of an 82-game season compared to a 30-game season. And the way that you travel, and then you add in the fact that there's an 8-minute longer game. For instance, in college, you've got to be a really good baseline out-of-bounds coach, both offensively and defensively. In the NBA, you better be excellent execution-wise on the side out-of-bounds because of the fact that the rules, you can advance the ball in the last 2 minutes at the NBA level. So there's so many differences, Coach, even the way you sub the 8-minute longer NBA game. You've got to have a little bit longer rotation, 82 games plus an 8-minute longer game. Here at Nevada, we've hardly subbed at all because it's I'm used to 48-minute game instead of a 40, and so I don't and then you're only playing 2 games a week as opposed to 3 or 4. I think there's a lot of differences. We hope that when somebody turns on the TV and watches Nevada play, that we're cosmetically pleasing offensively, that we space the floor, that we have players that are interchangeable. You know, the term has been used a lot lately, positionless. And so we feel, we call it position more here. We want guys to be able to play more positions than one. But that's kind of what we've been over the course of the last 2 years. We've been really, really great three-point shooting team, and defensively we've been able to take away the three-point shot. So we want to continue with all that, but we also want to get better from a defensive standpoint as well.
Several coaches I spoke to in the last day or so, and I told them that you were going to be on our podcast, I asked them, I said, what's your impression of Eric Musselman? And, of course, they all praised you vehemently. One of the things that they really talked about was your ability to motivate players. And I think that's so important today in college. Some of the college players that I've been around, they come in with the idea that they want what's available tomorrow yesterday. In other words, they want it right away. And I think being able to keep them focused and on track towards graduation, on track towards being the best they can be, taking their time with it, it really takes a person who is keen at motivating players. Tell me about your thoughts as it relates to motivation.
I think, first of all, Coach, you know, from what I've learned is, each player is different, and you've got to figure out what buttons motivate what people. And you know, when I was coaching the Golden State Warriors, Gilbert Arenas was a second-round draft pick, and so Gilbert was always motivated by players that were drafted ahead of him. And so all you had to do is find out who on the roster got drafted ahead of Gilbert Arenas and leave that on his chair, and he would have a little bit extra juice in his legs. So each guy is different. Eric Dampier, I remember, he was a guy that did not like any voices raised around him. He wanted to be talked to. He was motivated with his defensive rebounding numbers. That's what, you know, got him going. And here at Nevada, I mean, we've tried to, you know, Kendall Stevens was a guy that came to us from Purdue. He had been kind of up and down. He had one good year at Purdue, another down year, inconsistent three-point shooter. And, you know, we told Kendall, hey, we just want you to do one thing great. We want you to be as good as any player in the country as a three-point shooter. You don't need to worry about anything else. And he really bought into that. And then he had only 1 year of eligibility here, Coach, and what ended up happening was Kendall Stevens broke Jimmer Fredette's record as the all-time best shooter beyond the three-point arc in the Mountain West Conference history. And so we constantly try to find something that a guy can really, really hang his hat on and that he can take immense, immense pride in trying to be either the best in the conference, the best on our team, the best on the West Coast, or the best in the nation. And then that particular player will receive constant reminders as well.
You've done really, really well since you've been back in those 3 years. And the Mountain West, you know, you've won the Coach of the Year. Your team has won the conference championship. Last year you went all the way to the Final Eight. What's next for the Wolfpack? In other words, do you want your guys just satisfied to be really, really good in your league, or do you want to try to expand across maybe the Midwest and then eventually into the East? What's your plan for your team for the next, let's say, 2 or 3 years?
Well, I think, first of all, we're just worried about how can we have the best year that we could possibly have this year. And, obviously, I think when people start thinking too far ahead, the bottom line is, how do you get back to the big dance? Because the minute you start thinking that you're going to get in, you're not going to get in. And so we've constantly reminded our team all year long about all these preseason top 25 teams over the last 10 years that have not even made it back to the NCAA tournament. So number one, first and foremost, is how do we figure out a way to get ready in our non-conference to get ready for that second season, which is conference play. That's going to be vital to us, is we've got to be playing at a peak level once we get through our conference. And our goal right now is, how do we win our third straight regular season Mountain West Conference championship? And then once you finish the regular season, then you obviously go into your conference tournament, and that's where the automatic bid in our league is, and then you got to try to win that as well. So just a lot of mini goals, but not looking too far ahead and understanding that we got to get better. From where we are right now, Coach, we got to get a lot better than we are right now, and I think we will.
Last thing, you've been in college basketball now for 3 years. Anything you'd like to see changed, either about the game, the way it's played, or maybe the way it's regulated?
Well, I think it's the greatest game in the world, and college basketball is so fun because anybody can beat anybody on any given night, and your son proved that, certainly, that if you have a team prepared and they can beat anybody. And so that's what makes our game so great. But I do like what women's basketball has done. I love the fact that there's four quarters in their game, which simulates what the NBA does. Having coached internationally, having coached in the NBA, and now having coached at the college level, I wish that all three organizations could somehow get together and we could have the same world rules. I think it makes it easier if you go to a women's college game and then you go to a men's college game, there's different, now there's quarters instead of halves. You go to an NBA game and you call a timeout with a minute 12 to go, and you get a defensive rebound and you don't advance dribble, you can advance the ball to half court. I think that's the one rule where coaching comes into play and where you can captivate your audience late game way more than what we have at the collegiate level, is by having the ability to advance the basketball on timeout late game. I think that would drastically change and make it even more of a beautiful game with more close games. Because, the fact of the matter is, if you have to go full court in 4 seconds, there's a lot of luck involved. Not often are you able to score. But you turn on an NBA game every single night and there'll be 5 seconds left or 4 seconds. A team calls a timeout on the side out of bounds, and at least they can get a good look, which keeps people in the seats, and I think is great for the game.
Well, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. And to you, Eric Musselman, I sure appreciate your time. I appreciate your insights, your thoughts, your comments about this. We wish you the best for another great year out at Nevada. Thanks for taking your time to be with us. Good luck to you and your Wolfpack this season. And to learn more about the NABC, visit nabc.com.